Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfolio Computer Services. And you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Today, we're going to be talking all about folk art market in its multiform and myriad manifestations. I'm delighted now to welcome the members of the band Tradición. They have just arrived from Cuba. I'd like to introduce Benito Torres, Amaury Rodriguez, Miguel Delgado, Guillermo Linares, Gilberto Noriega, and we are also delighted to have Stuart Ashman, who is the Cabinet Secretary for the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs. Welcome. Bienvenidos.
Gracias. Thank you.
So let's talk about Son. This group, Tradición, is going to be playing this coming Thursday night, that's tomorrow, at 6 o'clock on the plaza at Santa Fe, and they're also going to be playing during Folk Art Market and giving workshops. We'll give all that information at the end, and on Sunday at the National Hispanic Cultural Center. But let's talk about Son, this type of music that you play. The group is called Tradición, which is short for traditional Son. What are the origins of Son, both the European and African origins, and where in Cuba did it come from?
Bueno, el Son surge a mediados del siglo XIX.
At the beginning of the middle of the 19th century, in the Oriental zone, the eastern, in the rural regions, it's a mix of the Bantu music, Afro-Cuban music, with the Spanish music that had come. The African music really permeates all the Caribbean. One of the important aspects of this music is the relationship between the soloist and the choir, accompanied by string instruments such as the guitar, the tres. Those make the first mix that's now called son. From these first or primary sones, there was no notation, it wasn't written music, and of course it was never taped or recorded. Around 1892, a tres player called Nene Manfugas took this music from the mountains and the rural areas of Oriente Province to the capital, Santiago de Cuba. And of course, when they heard the music, they danced all night until the next morning. And of course, this was a big thing for the dancers in Santiago de Cuba. And that is where the son began, in the city of Santiago de Cuba. At the beginning of the 20th century, in the 1900s, the internal migration of the country, including the army, which had many musicians, starts to go to Havana. Of course, in Havana, the salones, the music salones, were different. The culture was more European, Eurocentric. So those forms that were more related to the core, the soloist and the chorus, became more Europeanized. So there is a central theme that's usually what's sung at the beginning, which is the most danceable music. Well, that way, in the 20s, a quartet named the Cuarteto Oriental becomes in Havana the Sexteto Habanero, a six-piece band, who was one of the pioneers of the Havana son, el son habanero. And this, of course, gets augmented. New groups emerge. And then, of course, recording begins. And, of course, these groups get exported, particularly to the United States. In 1928, you hear the first versions of a group called the Grupo Matamoros. And they go around the world with the music, el son de la loma, son from the mountain. In 1930, the Orquesta Havana Casino does a tour in the United States and puts in vogue the song El Manicero. So much so that in Los Angeles, an ice cream was made called El Manicero.
Which means the peanut vendor.
That's right. The ice cream was not peanut, it was nuts, but it wasn't peanuts. Well, finally, to synthesize the whole idea of the song, in 1933, in the fair in Chicago, the Sexteto Ignacio Piñeiro was there and played. It was a big success in that fair. And that, with the recordings and the success of this Sexteto Piñeiro in Chicago, the music started to be heard and played and danced all over the world. In the 40s, Arsenio Rodriguez, a musician named Arsenio Rodriguez, increases the format of the song, including two trumpets, tumbas, which are bass drums,
tumbadoras,
and more singers. Influenced by American swing music, generates improvisations with the tumba and the tres. That gives it a completely new sound to the song. And then, of course, an era of groups of son players emerges, lasted into the 50s and 60s. There were many interpreters of that music, very famous one, the most famous of which, of course, was Benny Moré, and many others that we're not going to mention. In the 60s and 70s, there were even more changes, introducing new instruments, trombones, electric guitars, pianos, keyboards, and then, of course, that generates songo. Associated with the musician Juan Formel, who's from the Los Van Van.
The group Los Van Van, the most famous dance group in Cuba for the last, 45 years.
The son and the way it's played has influenced everywhere in the world. Right now you can hear son in Japan, in all of Latin America, in Europe, and the United States, of course. It gives you the sense that the son, not just the traditional, but with those changes, is a living music, and that has a future that's almost or over 150 years old. Is going to live for a long time.
Y esto te da una medida de que el son, ya no tan tradicional, pero con esos cambios, es una música que está viva y que tiene un futuro, que esta música de más de 150 años de generada va a estar viva por mucho tiempo.
When son came from Oriente, from the eastern part of Cuba, to Havana, and Havana was a city that was more Europeanized and it was really class and race stratified, how did the son affect the society? Who was dancing it? I mean, it made a huge impact.
Las clases más acomodadas bailaban sobre todo el danzón.
The wealthier classes danced el danzón. The son, as was brought to Havana by the poorest people, by the people in the army, used to be danced in communal barrios of Havana, including sometimes the government forbade dancing the song.
Why was that?
Because it was provocative, indecent, immoral, especially the dance. But of course it was impossible, it was too strong, too powerful. And slowly it penetrated in the dance salons until it won over. Even though actually right now the danzón is the national dance of Cuba.
To this day.
The song imposed itself over the danzón as the music and the dance of the people.
Como música, como baile sobre el danzón.
What are the musical and rhythmical elements of son? How do our American listeners know that they're hearing a song?
The son is really defined by the clave, the musical
instrument,
the clave, and he's going to now demonstrate to us what the characteristic is, the rhythm of the clave.
Por ejemplo, tengo en mis manos ahora el ritmo de la clave del son. Por ejemplo.
For example.
O sea, ¿qué es? Diciendo, cantando, la clave canta, la clave del son cubano canta 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2.
And so, that's the clave, that's the basic rhythm, and then what are the other musical elements? For example, we talked a little bit about the instruments, but what are the basic son instruments?
Por ejemplo, cuando le dije uno en este momento que la clave, el bongo.
One, of course, is the clave, el bongo, the bongo, two small drums, one a little larger than the other. Used to be that you would place them between your knees by the musician that was playing them. When the bongo surged, when it emerged, they used to make them out of goat skins. They were nailed to a wooden frame, and then they were tuned with heat, with fire. These days, they are they're tuned with wrenches. Another fundamental instrument of the son is the tres.
And that's a Cuban instrument that probably a lot of Americans haven't heard of.
It comes out of a Cuban need to create a more acute sound out of the guitar. What you do is you convert a guitar to a tres. The strings are corded in three pairs. At the beginning they were either strummed or picked. Even today we see the tres in many different forms. In the form of a guitar that's been converted, or the small pear, as we call it in Cuba, which is, of course, because it's shaped like a small pear. So the way that the guitar is strung is it's two plain strings at the high end, two plain strings in the middle, and then one brass wound bass string and one smooth string accompanying the bass, and they're octaves apart.
Y una segunda lista.
The tres is a traditional instrument for son. Is it played in a lot of other kinds of Cuban music?
Sí.
It's used in the country music, in the guaracha.
I mean, do they use tres in timba bands, for example?
No.
Personally, I haven't seen
any. Your colleague is saying yes.
I guess some bands do use it.
So when you have a band that has a tres and a guitar, what are the separate roles for each one?
La guitarra.
The guitar plays the harmonic accompaniment, and the tres does the melody.
Melodías.
And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be hearing some examples of the music of Tradición. I've got a couple of discs here, so we'll be playing at least a song or two. We're talking to the members of Tradición. So as we heard at the beginning of this program, son is the basis for a lot of music that has spread all over the world. And this group, Tradición, plays traditional son. But in what way has your music evolved from traditional son, and in what ways does it really stick to its traditional roots?
O sea, de los inicios de en cuanto a la agrupación.
Since the group was founded in 1998, the name of the group says it, Tradición, turned from the traditional Cuban music. At a few years after they started with that group, that type of music, we started playing something with a more national theme, but also with a touristic theme.
Vamos a trabajar ya en un ambiente un poco nacional, pero también algo más turístico también.
Meaning playing in venues that tourists were going to?
Sí, como no.
We have maintained and continue to attempt to maintain the traditional Cuban music. But in working in those places, the expectation, the demand of the visitors forced us to look for themes that were familiar to some of the visitors and not so much Cubans. We looked for songs, for ballads that were international. So there are themes and songs that we play that are not necessarily ours, but really a result of the demand of the public. But of course, we always try to maintain, to defend Cuban traditional music, reconquer it, even though there were some themes and rhythms that conspired against the Cuban traditional music.
De las personas que visitan estos lugares, aunque siempre tratamos de mantener lo que es la música tradicional cubana, defender la música tradicional cubana, reconquistarla después de que algunos ritmos actuales y no tan actuales conspiraron contra ella.
When you talk about tourists, where do these tourists that are visiting Havana, where did they come from?
Bueno, nosotros tenemos el privilegio.
We have the privilege of working in one of the most important restaurants in Cuba. I'm talking to you about a restaurant called La Bodeguita del Medio. We've been working in this place for over 10 years. There's been every kind of expectation and demand from the tourists. And there we have visitors from all over the world. We're talking about Israel, Japanese, Chileans, North Americans, a very visited location. And, you know, talking about this place that is so well visited, not known not only nationally but internationally, we've had to create a repertoire going from the traditional Cuban music to international music.
Tan internacionalmente conocido es que hemos tenido que hacer un repertorio amplio desde la música tradicional cubana hasta la música internacional.
Now, are Cubans listening to son, or is it really more the tourists?
Sí, en Cuba se escucha el son, pero
Cubans do listen to the son, but other rhythms have arrived and influenced it, which have at times opaqued, dulled the sound of the Cuban song. Especially the tourists are the ones that specify that they would like to have a Cuban song played. Not all of them, but many people really want to hear the Cuban song.
queriendo escuchar el son cubano.
Do you attribute that to the movie Buena Vista Social Club?
Sí, como muchísimo.
It has a lot of value. It was in a moment, it was done in a very opportune moment that really helped with Cuban music and helped develop the interest.
What are Cubans listening to and dancing to most now?
Bueno, el cubano en estos momentos.
So right now what you're hearing in Cuba is salsa, timba, and reggaeton. Although their group, the reggaeton has really stolen a lot from Cuban music and has created a new sound.
El reggaeton se ha robado mucho ritmo cubano que debiese estar en este minuto en los lugares que...
I've heard that a lot of young people are not dancing salsa casino and because they're just dancing reggaeton. Is that true?
Es cierto.
This is true. Unfortunately, this is true. I'm not against ritmo reggaeton, but we should dance more our son and our Cuban music.
Nuestro son y nuestra música cubana.
What do the people in your group listen to when you're not playing song?
Bueno, ya eso es.
Well, that's an interesting question. It's really the personal criterion of each individual, but the one thing that binds us is that we're all interested in what is the basis of Cuban music. Despite the fact that the son has had its highs and lows, there's always been composers and players in Cuba that were prestigious. Regardless of whether it was rock, salsa, or any other form, there was always the son. And there's always been a part of the population that was only interested in the son. In this moment, there are TV programs that stimulate casino dancing.
Casino, which is what we Americans call salsa dancing.
But the music that's danced is a mixture of son and timba and all of those things.
How do young musicians become proficient in traditional Cuban music? Do they learn it in school, on the street, in conservatories, from master musicians? How does that work?
In Cuba,
there are many who, are like me, have studied in school. Some have graduated, some haven't. Others learned it empirically. But right now, the Cuban schools of music are very well formed. You start in elementary school. You start learning music in elementary school. For example, we have a National School of the Arts, which already includes the study of the son, which you can actually get a degree in playing the tres. And there are many schools in Cuba that all teach music. And of course, out of those have emerged many great musicians. And right now, the son is in very good health, and it's being listened to a lot all over the world.
Y en ella se han formado muy grandes músicos. Y en estos momentos, verdad, que el son está en una muy buena salud y se está escuchando mucho en el mundo entero.
Is this the first time your group has traveled to the United States?
Sí.
Yes, this is our first time. We're very satisfied to be here, and we have an expectation that the music we're going to play here, which is the son, will be liked by all.
No doubt about it, and we are so looking forward to having you on the plaza on Thursday night, this coming Thursday. That's tomorrow at 6 o'clock on the Santa Fe Plaza. And then on Friday evening from 6 to 9:30, they will be at Folk Art Market. You can call for tickets, and you can call 505-983-1060 for tickets to that. And then they will be at Folk Art Market on Museum Hill here in Santa Fe from noon to 1:30. There's a lot of different bands playing and a lot of things happening there, but at noon you can check out Tradición. And then on Sunday, they will be at the National Hispanic Cultural Center at 7:30 in the evening. They're also at Folk Art Market going to be doing a workshop at 3 o'clock in the Museum of International Folk Art. So once again, I want to thank you all so much for being here. Benito Torres, Amaury Rodriguez, Gilberto Noriega, Miguel Delgado, Guillermo Linares of Tradición, and Stuart Ashman, who has been kindly translating for us, and he is the Cabinet Secretary for the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias.
And we're going to go out with some music of Tradición.
Fruta. mango de mamey y bizcochuelo, piña, piña dulce como azúcar, cosechada en las lomas del Caney. Traigo rico mango de mamey, piña que deliciosas son como labios de mujer. Caney de Oriente, tierra divina, una Florida donde vivió el Siboney, donde las frutas son como flores llenas de aromas y saturadas de miel. Caney de Oriente, tierra divina, donde la mano de Dios echó su bendición. ¿Quién quiere comprarme frutas sabrosas, marañones y mamoncillos del Caney?
To welcome Gasali Adeyemo, who is a fiber artist, and Akim Ayaniyi, master drummer, both from Nigeria, and they will both be at Folk Art Market this weekend. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having us.
Gasali, you're a fiber artist, and you work with indigo. What, among other things, what is indigo?
Indigo is a natural dye from West Africa. And it's a medicine. Also, it's a color we use to dye the fabric as well.
And it's a medicine?
It's a medicine.
What is it used for?
Many years ago, indigo, when I was a little kid, I remember when my stomach is a little upset, if it doesn't feel good. So my parents sent him to the bush to go pick up the young leaf. And then we soak it in the cold water. Then we rub it. Then it looked like a green tea. And then we put a little salt into the plant. And then we drink it. Like in 10 or 5 minutes, it settles your stomach easy. And even most of people, when they wear the fabric, they say the blue from the plant, he runs to their skin. I said, don't be afraid. Even the smell. I say it's a medicine because it protects your skin, your body, for a lot of sickness who want to come to you to be send them away as
very
well.
Interesting. So many people know it for its very rich blue color. You do a traditional kind of cloth dyeing with indigo.
Yes, I do. Most of the design we put on the fabric, they all have many. Even when you travel to West Africa in Nigeria, a lot of people, they come there, they say, oh, they saw so many designs on the wall in the houses, they say, oh, what does this mean? It's just the way of keep the culture, of keep the history in the community and in the environment. So anybody who came as a young generation, they been know what has been going on for many, many years, just to keep the history and what has been happening. So for the young people who's growing up, and also most of the design is the way, because many years ago, our parents, our great-grandparents, they don't know how to speak out. And we use the design to send a message to other people, like what we don't want in the environment, how much we should be care for each other, how much love we should be have for each other.
So where these designs that look to us like abstract designs are actually a kind of language?
Exactly. They all have meaning. Like one of them, we call it four friend. In my language, we call it oremeri, means if we all work together, we can make things happen. So it's just a way of the way people speak out many, many years ago in Africa.
And so today, of course, there are many modern chemical dyes that people use that have, to a great extent, all over the world, supplanted traditional dyes. How can you still keep going in indigo with all of these chemical dyes around you?
We still, because indigo is very, it's not only for medicine. If you want to become a president, or if you want to run for office today in Africa, that is why we call indigo is a color of love. So even the husband and wife, if they want to show how much they love each other, how much they care for each other, if one of them wear the indigo, they see like, oh, wow, she or he is very, you know, much love for each other. So that is why we call it color of love. But there's so many dye we're still using, which is called Prussian dye. That's why you see it in my piece. When you come to the market, I have the green, blue, red, purple. But even after we dye those colors into the fabric, we still use the indigo as a last color for the background of the color.
When you have an indigo pattern, what do you use to make the pattern? Is it a wax?
That's a good question. See, it's the three kind of processing we do. There is one called batik. I call it hot processing. There is one called cassava, which is the resist from the cassava. I mean, you can buy the plant here in this country. It's called yucca plant. It's a long, brown, skinny root.
Right.
And that one, I call it cold processing. But batik, we call it, it's a cheap way of making batik. People ask me, oh, how do you draw all the design to the fabric? I use a sponge, like a foam rubber. So I shape it with the scissors to look like a pen. That is what I dip into the wax to create all the design you see on the fabric. But the resist, I have three kind of tools I use for that. I use a chicken feather, and I have a small knife I use for the design also. Then I have a small broom.
Chicken feather, a knife, and a broom.
Nice. So each of those tools, they do the different design onto the fabric as well.
So when you make fabrics and clothing for sale at something like Folk Art Market, how do you do them for an American consumer, American buyer?
You mean
in terms of the styles?
Oh, the style. Mostly, I sell mostly fabric, mostly. But I did introduce a lot of people from all over the world, like not only America, European, you know, other places. Because when they asked me the dress I saw in the market, what does this mean? You know, what is the name? I call it Buba. I call it Dansiki. Oh, they ask me, oh, what do they wear it for? I said, well, this is where for just, you know, occasionally, or if you have any place to go. And it's good to wear mostly in the summer when it's so humid, when it's so hot. Because the way they cut, the way we make it, it gives you so many room to make the hair breeze to your body as well. That's how I introduce to people many times. They say, oh, what does this look like? What do you call this design? Then I tell them, this design called kaftan, this one is called buba, this one is called dansiki. They all have a different cut and the way they look.
We're talking to Gasali Adeyemo, who is a fiber artist. Let's turn to Akim Ayaniyi. You have been living in Santa Fe for many years, playing and teaching drumming.
Yes, that's right. I've been here for 16 years.
What is it like to be in Santa Fe, to be out of your country and trying to keep this tradition alive?
Well, I think it is a nice place and a lot of artists, very artistic town, Santa Fe. So, and although, you know, I base here, but at the same time, we take the music to everywhere in the nation. So from coast to coast and state to state, even international. So, but here is more settled for us. So we really enjoy being here, and there's a lot of artists, a lot of musicians already. So we make it really comfortable for us.
When you travel and you tour and you play for people, what kind of an ensemble is playing? How many people are in it, and what instruments?
We mostly do drum, singing, dancing. We use talking drum, hand drum of different kind, and then dancing. And we work with different people, like school, community, organization, or corporation. So we do a lot of different program. So to entertain everyone.
When you were young and you were living in Nigeria, you learned drumming from the earliest age. You come from, what, 9 generations of drummers, is that correct?
Yes, that's right. I'm a 9th generation to play in my drumming family. So this was hand to me, you know, from my family. So I got to study with my family, grandpa, you know. I have almost 200 drummers in my family, so this was transferred to me, so it's family work.
For us Americans who are watching you and watching the dancers, it's a form of entertainment. What is the role of the drumming that you learned in Nigeria as a child? Is it, it has a function that is not only entertainment, but social and religious as well?
Yeah, we have music for every occasion. So we have traditional, we have contemporary, music for festival, music for naming ceremony, or music for just entertainment, for people to have a good time. So we have it in different varieties. So that's just the way it is. And, you know, as you can tell, we have different instruments. So we can mix it in and out, and or use Western instruments if we have to play contemporary African music. So we can either mix it or play it separately. So that is why we have traditional and contemporary African music.
Contemporary African music is using instruments like electric guitar and
that's
every
right.
possible thing.
There you go. We use a guitar, we use a bongo, we use a trap set, and many other Western instruments.
I was, we were talking earlier to Tradición, which is a group from Cuba. What kind of interaction do you see between Caribbean, you know, Cuban, Puerto Rican, other Caribbean musicians and African musicians?
See, when you are talking about Cuba, they still have Yoruba people live in Cuba. So that means they are African descendants, and they still keep the traditional alive. So they sometimes, you know, we play the same rhythm, and sometimes we call it different name or the same name. But most of the time, I hear the same rhythm that I do play. So they still keep a lot of traditional music alive. And some of them speak Yoruba.
Would you like to play a little bit of music from the talking drum?
Okay, yeah, I'll do that. Thank you.
Kimayaniyi. I just have to ask you, so you were, that was the talking drum. What did the talking drum just say?
It's just talking about drumming in general, like requesting for a chance to play. So whatever we do after that, it's going to be successful.
Akeem and his group will be doing a workshop at Folk Art Market on Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then they're going to be performing at Folk Art Market on Sunday at 2 in the afternoon. And we're so looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Akeem Ayaniyi is a master drummer. Gasali Adeyemo is a fiber artist, both from Nigeria, both at Folk Art Market this weekend. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm delighted now to welcome Marcia Bull. She is the director of the Museum of International Folk Art. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Oh, I'm pleased to be here, Mary Charlotte.
So, Folk Art Market is coming up. We seem to be talking about that a lot on this radio program. And you have, among many other things going on at Folk Art Market, an exhibition within the Museum of International Folk Art called Empowering Women, Artisan Cooperatives That Transform Communities. Tell us about these cooperatives and how this little sub-exhibition came together.
Well, I'm so impressed with the market and how they involve themselves fully with the issues that are going on in the world via the folk arts. And so we wanted the museum to start becoming more relevant to today's issues, to our times. A lot of museums around the world are beginning to realize that we have a responsibility to present the issues, both sides of issues, and be advocates for whatever our subject matter is in our museums. And so I had devised the thought that it would be great to have a gallery of conscience, just a small gallery, but it's devoted to these various kinds of issues. And the first show that seemed doable and really covered a lot of ground was to do a show on women's cooperatives. Because it was clear from the applications to the market that women's cooperatives, it's a whole kind of movement, a way for women to work together.
And tell us more about that movement.
Well, it's, as I learn more, and I've been learning it from the women themselves in these various cooperatives, they found that working alone, doing their arts, which are intended not only for many cultural reasons, but also financial, that they often didn't get to keep the money. When they earned the arts, the money would go directly to their husbands or the men of the family. And so in banding together, they are more than the sum of their parts. They are certainly much stronger. They can much more efficient. They can get materials and often have help learning how to do marketing. They can get microloans. And as well, the men then don't have access to the money. And women spend the money on their families and their communities.
It's very interesting. I've been reading that Nicholas Kristof's book, and Nicholas Kristof, of course, is going to be speaking tonight at the Lenzik, and have been looking into this whole, I mean, there's been these movements of empowering women through microcredit and things like that. And one of the things that comes up over and over again is that sometimes their husbands are dead set against what they're doing and sometimes try to punish them. And then a few years later, it's all better.
Yes, yes. When I think often in circumstances, once men realize what a great supplement to the family economy and to the community, then they begin to be more comfortable with this. That's not always the case, however. And we do have one co-op in the exhibition from Kenya where the women have actually gone off and formed their own village.
Really?
Yes, and men are not allowed in the village. It's just women and children. And they've been successful. These are Samburu women who have, many have been raped by British soldiers, domestic violence at home. And so they've left home and formed this village of Umoja. And there's about 48 women who live there with their children, and they make these magnificent beaded necklaces. We've all seen them.
Of which are in this Empowering Women exhibition.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and they've done well. They now have their own livestock and their own land, and they now have meat to eat instead of the leftovers of what was left after their husbands had eaten the meat. And so they're doing well, but a lot of the husbands are very angry and very jealous.
What about the sons? Do they get to live there till they're 18 or something? Or?
Well, I don't know all the details. We'll have to ask Rebecca Lolasoli, who will be at the market.
Very interesting.
She can answer some of those special questions.
It seems like there is just a worldwide movement against sexism and misogyny and the terrible treatment of women. And the more I read about it, I mean, the more it seems like the issues that we confronted in the 19th century of slavery, our version of that today is the terrible treatment of women all over the world.
I think this is the issue of the late 20th and 21st centuries, is for women finally to take their place as partners in societies. And I'm so impressed with these women who are leaders, who have formed these cooperatives, and we've now been spending several days with them. And, you know, the risks they've had to take. Amina Yabis from Morocco ran for public office and didn't win because no one knew who she was, because she was always at home. So she decided that she would form a women's cooperative, and they make buttons. These are the traditional buttons that are worn all over Morocco on clothing. But also, she educated herself, there are literacy classes for the other women, and they're gaining confidence. And as they gain confidence, then not only confidence, but respect. And then the men in the leadership began to take note of them. In fact, the co-op from Swaziland, they have been successful at the folk art market. And this year, because they've been invited to come to this exhibit, and we're just thrilled, the chief actually asked them to come and see him, and he presented them to the village, whereas usually he takes no notice of them whatsoever.
To what extent are the markets for the things that these cooperatives produce reliant on wealthy foreign nations versus selling within their own countries?
Well, I think there are two. There's definitely two markets. You know, in many of these countries, the traditional objects are still being used by the makers and their surrounding villages, and they've made those for years in exchanged goods, but certainly they need a wider market, and that means more of a worldwide market. And we can't just depend on one international folk art market here in Santa Fe, although those who do come, who are selected and come, often make enough money to last for the whole year.
Which is extraordinary.
Well, it is extraordinary. I did, however, another story. I'm afraid I'm full of stories because I've been talking to these women now for several days. In Rwanda, as a result of being at the International Folk Art Market, Janet, the founder of one of the cooperatives, told me that she had interior designers who came to them and wanted to order their baskets for this big hotel, and it was in Rwanda, and there was actually a competition, but her co-op won, and so they made baskets for this hotel. Now again, that's going to be probably foreigners or business travelers who are coming to the hotel, but it broadens people's who are staying there, broadens their vision of what they might purchase when they're coming there.
Marcia Bull is director of the Museum of International Folk Art, and this wonderful exhibition within the museum is called Empowering Women, Artisan Cooperatives That Transform Communities. And as they transform communities, they transform the society around them.
They really do. This is one of the things that I think is most encouraging, is that when women are successful selling their folk arts, they can buy shoes for their children, they can pay for educations for their children. That some of the co-ops have set up soup kitchens for orphans. Others have set up schools for children orphaned because of AIDS. And they're doing quite a lot for their communities as a result of the success of their folk arts, a wider success.
So Folk Art Market is going on all weekend. And for more information, people can go to folkartmarket.org. There is a toll-free number, which is 888-670-3655. And then for more information, you can go to you can call 505-476-1197. Marcia Bull, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz presents the monthly Women in Jazz Hour.